In my many years of parish ministry, I hardly ever used illustrated sermons, primarily because I was still putting finishing touches on it at 7:30 in the morning on Sunday. Here, with a little bit more leisure and a service that's dedicated to something with 10 pictures, how could we not try this? I will be assisted by the able Vanna, I mean Edie, who will guide us through our little adventure. Recently, I was contacted by someone who explained that he had been made a spiritual teacher by the Tibetan master Padmasambhava. As that particular master has been dead for about 1,200 years, I admit I was a little suspicious. He then went on to explain how there are serious problems with Zen, and particularly with the discipline that I principally teach, koan introspection. I've been a practitioner on this way for nearly 50 years, and a teacher for more than 20. So hearing there were problems, well, no surprise. He then went on to explain that real spiritual practices, like he said, koans, are all mechanical. That is, you stick yourself in one end, grind it, and then enlightenment comes out the other. He continued how the discipline as it is usually taught misses some steps. And that's why not everyone who practices koans gets enlightened. He then generously offered his fix, sort of a spiritual version of a computer patch. I replied, I wasn't interested, thank you. My mother taught me always to be polite. And then I blocked him. That's another computer term. The exchange did set me to thinking, however, not about surefire fixes for our spiritual practices, well, maybe a little, but mostly about our paths themselves, the whys and the ways we bring intentionality to the matter of life and death and meaning. I've been deeply impressed by the events yesterday, those kids leading the country toward its better angels. I think of our call to work for justice and our failures in the doing of it. And of course, this is a church, a spiritual community, a nursery of the heart, if you will. We here are all about the deeper reasons that give us our marching orders and keeps us on track. And with that, it set me to thinking about what I'd call our maps of the spiritual life. Of course, with a talk to a bunch of Unitarian Universalists, beginning with some definitions of terms, might be in order. So, first, that messy and complicated word spiritual. It can mean so many things. That's both the joy and the difficulty of language, and particularly words. We could spend our entire time here unpacking spiritual. But let me simply summarize, spiritual has its metaphorical roots in breath. And something I find really interesting is how, in fact, pretty much all cultures and their religions use this primary metaphor of breath for that quest for meaning and purpose in life. I take some particular significance out of that near, or perhaps actually universal use of spiritual for the great quest of our human hearts. And that brings us up to a second term necessary for this reflection. I first stumbled upon the term perennialism in Aldous Huxley's lovely book, The Perennial Philosophy, which I found in my mid-adolescence. For me, in my youth, searching for an intellectually honest spiritual path, which meant to me not obviously conflicting with the natural world, this book hinted at what would become the general direction of my quest for meaning and purpose. It definitely doesn't end there. In fact, today I have serious criticisms of that book. But that said, this is where I started. Today, as I said, with that complicated relationship with perennialism, I find on the one hand, I think it broadly points in the right direction when it suggests there are universal truths that each religion touches. This insight is a big reason why I would end up a Unitarian Universalist. On the other hand, it seems pretty obvious to me that there is not a single mountain with all religions following their separate paths up to the same summit. Lots of different mountains. Pretty obvious to anyone who reads more than the headlines about religions. And with that, some of these religions I find are more useful than others, which is probably why Zen Buddhism and its disciplines remain the core of my actual interior life. From this perspective, I find there are currents of religion that seem pretty obviously rooted in our biology, making these currents universal, at least so far as humans are concerned. And if I read that correctly, I hope it would also be obvious what I'm calling currents are insights available without any religion at all. Still, it is the primary project of religion. And with that, another definition, religion. Religion, I find, consists of those attempts within cultures to coalesce their collective wisdom about meaning. I'll say that again. I believe that religion consists of those attempts within cultures to coalesce our collective wisdom about meaning. And these are the common and universal currents. Seeking meaning, awakening, salvation, all those different words point to some great healing of some terrible rift, some split in our hearts, some sense of dis-ease or isolation. I believe they are in fact about our totally human, absolutely natural sense of disconnection. And with that, our deep ability to see there are connections. Or to quote a Buddhist text, all beings, one body. We are all constantly being called from separation and isolation toward connection, toward intimacy. So, the real stuff, authentic spirituality, the perennial thing, religion that matters, is all about, as the Zen teacher Dosho Port tells us, non-dual embodiment. I believe I have a picture of non-dual embodiment. Everything else is extras. And with that, spiritual maps. We've well been warned by Alfred Kurzybski that the map is not the territory. And Gregory Bateson makes sure we get it by adding the name is not the thing named. The reason that I close to immediately blocked my astrally ordained spiritual master was not the astral thing, although given my taste buds in such matters, that could have been enough, but because he reduced my spiritual path to a mechanical thing that just needed some oil at the juncture of some gears. That led me to know he had no clue. There are spiritual disciplines. They can be enormously useful. I've given my life to one. But they are not mechanical. They are organic. I would add they are also human things, developed by people and subject to abuse. And always, always, they only help. They only point. They only shepherd. They only guide. Two other things have to happen, not directly connected to the spiritual technologies we take up. One is volitional. We, that is you or me, we have to want, we have to be willing, we have to open our hearts and minds to the project. Or, to use another difficult word, we have to surrender into the process. And still, that isn't quite enough. Then, in some mysterious and frankly unfathomable, unmappable, unpredictable way, the insight, the opening, the grace that allows us to see the whole thing in all its particulars happens when it happens. To quote the scriptures of the Western tradition, the spirit rests where it will. All this said, messy, map isn't the territory, spirit rests where it will, many truths, there are nonetheless genuine pointers for those of us who wish to walk the paths of the spirit, who seek to know with our own lives the deeper realities of this life. There are maps we can trust. That is, as far as maps can be trusted. Words I hope that echo with all sorts of hesitations for anyone who has found their favorite GPS map taking them in an endless loop at one time or another. if we use maps, we need to remember every once in a while to lift our heads up and look around. Get that bigger picture. Do that, and then these maps can be quite helpful. Possibly among the oldest strata of stories that help us mark out a spiritual path is Hero's Journey. Similarly, the Greek mystery rites. And here in the modern West, the life of Jesus turned into a cycle. This is Palm Sunday in the Christian churches, part of powerful moment in this cycle that can be seen as the life of each of us, growing deeper and wiser through pain and joy. One of the most compelling maps for me is the 16th century Spanish Christian mystic John of the Cross's map, described as the ascent of Mount Carmel. Vanna? While over the years, many have found, this is going to be awful now, I think I'm going to call Edie Vanna for the rest of our relationship, which I fear might therefore become short. I will do my best. Over the years, many have found John Bunyan's 17th century classic, sometimes called the first English language novel, Pilgrim's Progress. How did we lose Pilgrim's Progress? Well, never mind. Pilgrim's Progress. That is Pilgrim's Progress. Yeah. Can you see it? I can't see it. It's too bad. These were great pictures. Do we want to try that? Okay. Ooh. Now, we're not going back to the other pictures. Oh, but we've got 10 cool ones coming up. And that's the bottom line for this conversation. I've found the most useful of these various maps that I've come across in the various parts of the world from the Zen, one from the Zen tradition. It's called by several names, most commonly either the 10 ox herding pictures or even more simply the 10 bulls. And that's that one. The metaphor of a bull or ox as the image of ourselves and our hidden hearts is ancient. In the putative earliest strata of Buddhist texts, one of the suttas features the image of our path as taming a wild calf. The earliest strata of this actual map in Zen appears to be a five-step version by the 11th century Chinese master Sekyo, which featured a gradual whitening of the image of the bull until there is simply an empty circle. This conclusion is corrected by a rough contemporary, another Zen master, Jitoku Ki, who adds in a sixth picture after the image of emptiness. Also, there's another map with eight pictures. But the version that has captured most of us on the path, who find it as a true representation of our way, was formulated by a 12th century Chinese Rinzai master, Kakuan Chin. It became wildly popular and eventually made its way to Japan, and by way of the early translator and interpreter of Zen to the West, D.T. Suzuki, to us. Today, there are numerous commentaries on this text, starting with those from Kakuan. Rummaging around my bookshelves, which I guess says something about me, I found five by contemporary teachers, Chinese, Japanese, and Americans. It's a perennial of the perennial way. Let's quickly look at this map of our human hearts, of our longing, and our finding. First, it begins with noticing something is missing. For each of us, this might be something different. For me, excuse me. It turns out if you don't preach every week, you begin to lose where to pitch your voice. It begins with noticing something is missing. For each of us, this might be something different. For me, it was all about God. At the beginning, it was, is there a God? And then somehow, subtly, there was a shift. as I realized that God didn't have to be either the creator or the sustainer or even the destroyer. But rather, as I wrote back in seminary when I was way smarter than I am now, God is a hole in the language into which we throw all our hopes and fears. Hole, gaping wide. Although one of my professors helped me on the way to knowing a bit less when she offered that, yes, God is a hole in the language, James, W-H-O-L-E, as in completion. Although I have long since learned any so-called completion only leads to something new. Whatever, we begin. In the images of the tradition, we name that longing of our hearts theos. Second, we find some traces, a footprint, maybe some spore. We had smaller children here at the first service, so I said poop. Want to make sure we understood. For me, again, it was probably that shift of attitude from is to what. There is a mysterious turning when we launch on the spiritual journey. If we pay attention, if we allow our hearts to open to the possibilities, then it turns out possibilities abound. Third, then if we're lucky, we confront the ox. The power and beauty, as terrible as it is, well, it presents. Maybe it's seeing your newborn child for the first time. Possibly it's a kiss. Maybe it's finding a job that is more than a job. It can happen walking in the woods or on the beach. It can, and I find this most compelling, it can happen in prison or a foxhole. However it presents, that confrontation with reality, with the ox, changes everything. Fourth. In Zen, there are many arguments, endless apparently, about whether you practice hard and get enlightened, or you get enlightened and then practice hard. What I find is that practice and awakening are intimately connected, but not in any causal way. They are two facets of the same mystery. But with a glimpse of the real, those of us committed on the way, we find our hearts calling and redoubling the disciplines of the heart. For me, they are summarized as sit down, shut up, pay attention, and then repeat. Each of us needs to find that practice which is right for us. Maybe it's sauntering. Maybe it's singing. Fifth, here is the long path where we begin to find the disciplines are not so much rules that contain us, but the boundaries of our own heart. They are permeable. We cross freely from inside to out and outside to in. The whole world becomes ours. Here we discover the play of the world. Sixth, and with that we hear the distant song. It could be faint. It could be that alternative drummer. But it is enough, and we begin to follow it home. Seventh. Here we forget all the stuff and bother. In the image, we find a simple hut. It's all we need. Eighth. The image is an empty circle. Here we discover that nameless place the Taoist poem describes. The way that can be told is not the eternal way. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The unnameable is the eternally real. In many Eastern spiritual traditions, this is the summum bonum. In fact, as I mentioned, in the earliest version of the ox herding pictures, for many it ends here. But that would be very sad. Ninth. The image clutters up a bit. Here we get a picture of nature. Here we find our mother, or if you prefer, our father. Me, I love that continuing of the Tao Te Ching I just cited, where we see naming is the origin of all particular things. Everything named, everything authentic, if passing, you me, but now discovered with new eyes, now held with open hands, now encountered with a different kind of love. And yet, even that isn't the end. The 10th Oxherding picture shows a fat man encountering the world. In some versions of the picture, the figure is actually walking into a marketplace. One traditional commentary says it is returning to the world with bliss-bestowing hands. The small inside Buddhist joke is that the image is a putte, or hotai. He is the fat monk with the bag of gifts, sometimes called the Laughing Buddha. Not the Buddha of history, but a Zen monk who will become the Buddha of the next age. Part of that joke is that he represents our common inheritance, our common future. We are all, after all, the Buddha of a next age. So, that's one mapping of the spiritual path, one that I found particularly helpful, and maybe you will too. But let me add a little bit of direction. Another map of something important in my past was Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's Five Stages of Grief. Perhaps you know them: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, acceptance. They proved to be an amazing gift to people helping the dying, and also for many who are dying. Except that people quickly settled into these are the five stages. First you deny, and then so on up to acceptance. But people turn out to be messy. She named five true things, but people did them as they wanted, and in no particular order. And also, and this is important, often returning or starting over. Well, I suggest we may find the 10 Oxherding pictures are equally messy. I've known people who've manifested that returning to the world without ever having taken on a spiritual path. Not many, but. And, well, pick your picture. It might be the beginning, and then you might discover you're jumping around. Probably will. That map, as Alfred Kurzybski told us, is not the territory. Unlike the guidance of that astrally anointed spiritual teacher, the way is not mechanical. As T.S. Eliot sang into our hearts, we shall not cease from exploration, and the end of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know that place for the first time, the spiritual way. And that one more thing. We know these are hard times. This may be a particularly difficult moment. And yes, when hasn't it been so? But we are called to our better angels. We're hearing it from our children right now. We're hearing it from our own hearts. We're hearing it from the body of the world. And so, there's that Japanese saying which I keep finding haunting me and correcting me and calling me. Vision without action, it's just a dream. But any action without vision, it becomes a nightmare. Save us from the true believers. You want to be of use in this world? You want to heal the wounds of your own heart? Well, there are maps that help. The real ones take us, into the mysteries of intimacy. How are we connected? How are we different? Find this, and you will know what to do. The intimate way.